Reward modeling and advantage conditioning, a deep dive into unconventional reinforcement learning. Introduction, the puzzle of advantage conditioning. Imagine you're designing a reinforcement learning system, and someone tells you they want to condition the policy on the advantage function before taking an action. Your first reaction might be confusion. This seems to violate the fundamental causal structure of reinforcement learning. How can you know the advantage of an action before you've taken it and observed its consequences? This apparent paradox sits at the heart of some fascinating recent developments in reward modeling and policy optimization. Today, we're going to embark on a technical journey that starts with the bedrock principles of reinforcement learning and builds up to understand some genuinely unconventional approaches that challenge our standard assumptions about how advantage functions should be used. We'll examine questions that initially seem almost absurd. Why would you feed the advantage function as input to your policy network instead of using it as a training signal? How do you couple reward models with advantage computation in ways that deviate from textbook approaches? And why is PPO, one of our most reliable policy gradient methods, fundamentally such a noisy, variance-prone algorithm? By the end of our exploration, these seemingly strange design choices will make sense as principled engineering decisions with specific trade-offs and use cases. We'll understand not just what these systems do, but why they were designed this way and when you might choose these approaches over conventional alternatives. Foundations, understanding the advantage function. Let's start by building a rock-solid understanding of what the advantage function actually represents, because this concept is central to everything we'll discuss. In reinforcement learning, we're fundamentally trying to distinguish between actions that are better or worse than average in a given state. The advantage function ASA captures exactly this intuition. It tells us how much better or worse taking action A in state S is compared to the average action we might take from that state. Mathematically, the advantage function is defined as ASA equals QSA plus VS, where QSA is the action value function, the expected return from taking action A in state S and then following the policy, and VS is the state value function, the expected return from state S following the policy. But let's think about what this means conceptually. The value function VS represents our baseline expectation. If we act according to our current policy from state S, this is the expected cumulative reward we'll receive. The Q function QSA represents the expected return if we force ourselves to take action A in state S and then revert to following our policy. The advantage function captures the delta, the improvement or degradation from deviating from our typical behavior. This formulation has beautiful properties for policy gradient methods. When we're updating our policy parameters using gradient ascent, we want to increase the probability of actions that performed better than expected and decrease the probability of actions that performed worse. The advantage function gives us exactly this signal. Positive advantages encourage actions, negative advantages discourage them, and zero advantage means this action performed exactly as expected, no update needed. In standard actor-critic architectures, we use the advantage function as a control variate for the policy gradient. The famous policy gradient theorem tells us that the gradient of our objective with respect to policy parameters involves the product of the policy gradient and the advantage function. This is why advantage functions are so central to modern RL. They provide the learning signal that tells us which actions to reinforce. The standard pipeline, how advantage functions are typically computed. Before we dive into the unconventional approaches, let's establish how advantage functions are normally computed and used. This standard pipeline will help us understand why the alternative approaches we'll discuss later are so surprising. In a typical actor-critic setup, we maintain separate networks or network heads, an actor policy network that outputs action probabilities, and a critic value network that estimates state values. During training, we collect experience by running our current policy in the environment. For each state action reward transition, we can compute temporal difference errors and use these to train both the policy and value networks. The advantage computation happens post hoc after we've collected experience. We use our value function estimates to compute advantages for the actions we actually took, then use these advantages to update our policy. The critic learns by minimizing the temporal difference error between its value predictions and the observed returns or bootstrap targets. This pipeline has a clear causal structure. We take actions based on our current policy, observe outcomes, compute advantages based on those outcomes, and then update our policy to favor actions with positive advantages. The advantage function serves as a training signal. It's the teacher that tells our policy network what to learn. The key insight is that advantages are computed retrospectively. We can only know if an action was advantageous after we've taken it and observed at least some of its consequences. This is why the idea of conditioning a policy on advantages before taking actions seems so counterintuitive. Reward modeling, learning human preferences. Now let's turn our attention to reward modeling, which provides important context for understanding why someone might want to use advantage functions in unconventional ways. Traditional reinforcement learning assumes we have access to a reward function. The environment tells us immediately how good or bad each state or action is. But in many real-world applications, especially those involving human preferences or complex objectives, designing an explicit reward function is extremely difficult. How do you write down a reward function for helpful and harmless AI behavior or aesthetically pleasing robot movements? Reward modeling offers an elegant solution. Instead of handcrafting reward functions, we learn them from data. The basic idea is to collect comparison data, pairs of trajectories or behaviors where humans indicate which one they prefer, and then train a neural network to predict these preferences. This reward model can then be used as the reward signal for standard RL training. The training procedure for reward models is conceptually straightforward but practically nuanced. We need a data set of comparisons, typically collected by showing humans pairs of agent behaviors and asking them to choose which one is better. These comparisons are converted into a preference data set where each example consists of two trajectories or trajectory segments and a label indicating which is preferred. The reward model is then trained to maximize the likelihood of the observed preferences. If we model the probability that trajectory A is preferred over trajectory B as a sigmoid function of the difference in their predicted rewards, we can use standard maximum likelihood training. The model learns to assign higher reward scores to preferred behaviors and lower scores to non-preferred ones. But here's where things get interesting. Once we have a trained reward model, how exactly do we use it? The straightforward approach is to use it as a replacement for the environment's reward signal. Run the reward model on each state or action and use its output as the reward for RL training. However, this creates several challenges around reward model accuracy, distribution shift, and optimization pressure. PPO, the noisy workhorse of policy gradients. Before we can understand the unconventional approaches to advantage conditioning, we need to deeply understand proximal policy optimization, PPO, and why it's inherently such a noisy algorithm. This context is crucial because noise characteristics often drive architectural decisions in RL systems. PPO belongs to the family of policy gradient methods, and like all methods in this family, it suffers from high variance in its gradient estimates. Let's unpack why this happens and why it's particularly pronounced in PPO. The fundamental source of variance in policy gradients comes from the stochastic nature of the learning process. When we estimate policy gradients, we're essentially sampling trajectories from our current policy and using these samples to estimate the gradient of our expected return. Each trajectory gives us a noisy estimate of this gradient, and the variance of this estimate depends on the variance of the returns we observe. PPO introduces additional sources of variance through its clipping mechanism. The key insight of PPO is to prevent policy updates that are too large by clipping the probability ratio between the new and old policies. This prevents catastrophic policy updates that could destroy learning progress. However, the clipping operation introduces discontinuities in the objective function, making the optimization landscape more complex and potentially increasing gradient variance. The clipping threshold, typically 0.2, creates regions where the gradient is zero. When the probability ratio exceeds the clip bounds, the gradient disappears entirely. This means that for actions where the new policy differs significantly from the old policy, we get no learning signal at all. The result is a training process that can seem to make inconsistent progress, with periods of rapid improvement followed by apparent stagnation. Another source of noise in PPO comes from the advantage estimation itself. Most PPO implementations use generalized advantage estimation, GAE, which involves temporal difference bootstrapping with bias variance trade-offs controlled by hyperparameters. The advantage estimates are themselves noisy, and this noise propagates directly into the policy gradient estimates. The multiple epochs of updates that PPO performs on each batch of data can also contribute to variance. As the policy changes during these multiple epochs, the important sampling corrections become less accurate, potentially introducing bias and increasing variance in later epochs. Understanding these noise characteristics is crucial because they often drive practitioners to seek alternative approaches that might provide more stable learning signals or better ways to utilize the information contained in value function estimates. The unconventional approach, advantage as input. Now we come to the heart of the puzzle, approaches that use the advantage function as an input to the policy network rather than just as a training signal. This is indeed weird in the sense that it deviates significantly from standard RL practices, but there are principled reasons why someone might choose this architecture. Let's first understand what this means concretely. Instead of a policy network that takes only state as input and outputs action probabilities, we're considering a policy network that takes both state and advantage as inputs. The advantage values are provided as additional conditioning information that influences the action selection process. But wait, this immediately raises the causal question we started with. How can we provide advantage values as input if advantages are typically computed retrospectively based on observed outcomes? The answer lies in changing how we conceptualize and compute advantages. One possibility is that we're using predicted or estimated advantages rather than true advantages. Our value function network could be producing not just state value estimates, but also action value estimates, Q values, for all possible actions. From these Q values, we can compute predicted advantages for each action without actually taking them. These predicted advantages can then be fed as additional input to our policy network. Another interpretation is that we're conditioning on advantages from similar or related experiences. If we have a rich data set of past interactions, we might be able to retrieve relevant advantage information and use it to inform current decision making. This approach treats advantage conditioning as a form of experience replay or memory augmentation. The potential benefits of advantage conditioning become clearer when we think about it as a form of explicit value-aware action selection. Traditional policies make decisions based only on state information, relying on implicit value estimates embedded in the policy parameters. By explicitly conditioning on advantage estimates, we're providing the policy with direct access to value information, potentially enabling more informed decision-making. This approach might be particularly valuable in scenarios where value estimation is more reliable than policy learning, or where we want to decouple value learning from policy learning for computational or architectural reasons. It could also provide benefits in terms of sample efficiency. If our value estimates are good, conditioning on them might accelerate policy learning by providing richer supervisory signals. Coupling reward models with advantage functions. The coupling between reward models and advantage functions represents another departure from standard practices that deserves careful analysis. In conventional setups, reward models and value functions operate in a relatively straightforward pipeline. The reward model provides reward signals, which are used to compute returns, which in turn are used to train value functions that produce advantage estimates. But the approaches we're examining suggest more intimate coupling between these components. One possibility is that the reward model and advantage computation are trained jointly, with shared representations or mutual dependencies that create tighter integration than traditional pipelines. Consider an architecture where the reward model doesn't just output scalar rewards, but also produces auxiliary information about value estimates or advantage predictions. This could take the form of a multi-headed network, where one head predicts rewards and another head predicts relative action values. The advantage computation could then combine information from both heads, creating a richer estimate than either component could produce alone. Another form of coupling might involve using the reward model to directly predict advantage functions rather than just rewards. If we have comparison data that indicates not just which trajectory is better, but also which specific actions within trajectories are more advantageous, we could train the reward model to predict these fine-grained advantage differences directly. This tight coupling could provide several advantages. It might improve sample efficiency by allowing the reward model and value estimation to share learned representations. It could also provide more stable learning by reducing the accumulation of errors across multiple stages of the traditional pipeline. However, tight coupling also introduces complexity and potential failure modes. If the reward model produces biased estimates, these biases could propagate directly into advantage computation and policy learning. The system becomes less modular, making it harder to debug and analyze individual components. Data labeling for reward models, the human in the loop. The question of how to label data for reward model training brings us to one of the most practical and important aspects of preference-based learning. The labeling process is typically the bottleneck that determines both the quality and scalability of reward modeling approaches. Human preference elicitation usually involves presenting pairs of behaviors to human evaluators and asking them to choose which one is better according to the desired criteria. This seems simple, but it involves numerous subtle design choices that can significantly impact the quality of the learned reward model. The first challenge is defining what constitutes a meaningful comparison. Should evaluators compare entire trajectories or smaller segments of behavior? Longer comparisons provide more context, but may overwhelm evaluators and introduce inconsistency. Shorter segments are easier to evaluate, but may miss important temporal dependencies in the task. The interface design for collecting preferences also matters enormously. Side-by-side video comparisons are common, but the presentation order, replay speed, and UI elements can all introduce biases. Some systems use more sophisticated interfaces that allow evaluators to scrub through time, focus on particular aspects of the behavior, or provide more nuanced feedback than simple binary preferences. Evaluator training and consistency present another set of challenges. Human evaluators need to understand the task and criteria clearly, but they also need to maintain consistency over time and across evaluators. This often requires extensive training, regular calibration exercises, and ongoing quality monitoring. The distribution of comparisons also requires careful consideration. Random sampling of behavior pairs might not provide the most informative training signal. Comparisons between very similar behaviors might be more valuable for learning fine-grained preferences, while comparisons between clearly different behaviors help establish basic preference orderings. Some recent approaches have explored alternative labeling modalities beyond pairwise comparisons. These include absolute scoring, ranking of multiple alternatives, or even more complex structured feedback. Each modality has different trade-offs in terms of evaluator cognitive load, information density, and modeling complexity. Implementation architecture, making the unconventional work. When implementing these unconventional approaches, several architectural decisions become critical. The integration of advantage conditioning into policy networks requires careful consideration of input representation, network architecture, and training procedures. For advantage conditioning, one key decision is how to represent and normalize advantage values. Raw advantage estimates can have very different scales and distributions across different states and training phases. Proper normalization and representation of these values as network inputs becomes crucial for stable learning. The network architecture must also be designed to effectively utilize the advantage information. Simple concatenation of state and advantage features might not be sufficient. The network needs to learn how to appropriately weight and combine this information. This might require specialized architectures, attention mechanisms, or other techniques for handling multimodal inputs. Training procedures for advantage condition policies also differ from standard approaches. The dependency on advantage estimates means that policy learning is more tightly coupled to value learning than usual. This might require careful scheduling of updates, specialized loss functions, or other modifications to standard training algorithms. For the reward model and advantage function coupling, implementation requires careful attention to information flow and error propagation. If these components share representations or are trained jointly, the training dynamics become more complex than in modular approaches. Gradient flow, learning rates, and regularization all need to be carefully tuned to prevent one component from dominating or destabilizing the others. The computational overhead of these approaches also deserves consideration. Advantage conditioning requires additional forward passes through value networks during action selection. Tight coupling between reward models and advantage computation might require more complex inference procedures. These computational costs need to be weighed against the potential benefits in sample efficiency or performance. Critical analysis: when and why these approaches make sense. Having built up our understanding of these unconventional approaches, let's step back and critically analyze when and why you might choose them over standard alternatives. The key insight is that these approaches represent different trade-offs in the bias-variance spectrum of RL algorithms. Advantage conditioning can be viewed as a form of explicit value-based guidance for policy learning. In environments where value estimation is more reliable or sample-efficient than direct policy learning, this approach might provide benefits. It's particularly compelling in scenarios where you have access to high-quality value estimates from offline data, domain knowledge, or other sources. The approach might also be valuable when you need fine-grained control over the exploration-exploitation trade-off. By explicitly conditioning on advantage estimates, you can more directly control how the policy balances between exploiting current knowledge and exploring new possibilities. This could be useful in applications where safety or efficiency constraints require careful control of exploration. However, advantage conditioning also introduces dependencies that might be problematic. The policy becomes dependent on the quality of advantage estimates, and errors in value estimation propagate directly into action selection. This coupling might reduce robustness compared to approaches where policy and value learning are more decoupled. The tight coupling between reward models and advantage functions makes sense when you have rich preference data that includes fine-grained information about action quality. If your human evaluators can provide detailed feedback about which specific actions or decisions within trajectories are better, a tightly coupled architecture might be able to utilize this information more effectively than a traditional pipeline. This approach might also be beneficial when computational efficiency is important and you want to minimize the number of separate models you need to train and deploy. A single network that jointly handles reward modeling and advantage estimation might be more efficient than separate components. Variance reduction and stability considerations. One of the most compelling potential benefits of these unconventional approaches is variance reduction. PPO's high variance is a significant limitation in many applications, and architectural changes that provide more stable learning signals are valuable. Advantage conditioning might reduce variance by providing the policy with more direct access to value information. Instead of relying on noisy gradient estimates that mix policy and value signals, the policy can directly condition on value estimates during action selection. This could lead to more consistent behavior and faster convergence. The coupling between reward models and advantage functions might also provide variance reduction benefits. By sharing representations and training objectives, the system might be able to learn more stable estimates than separate components trained independently. The reward model's preference-based training signal might provide a more stable supervisory signal than the temporal difference errors typically used for value function training. However, these approaches might also introduce new sources of variance. Advantage conditioning creates additional dependencies that could propagate noise from value estimation into action selection. The coupling between reward models and advantage functions creates more complex training dynamics that might be harder to stabilize. The net effect on variance likely depends on the specific implementation details and the characteristics of the problem domain. Careful empirical evaluation would be needed to determine whether these approaches actually provide the stability benefits they promise. Future directions and open questions. These unconventional approaches to advantage functions and reward modeling open up several interesting research directions and raise important questions about the fundamental principles of reinforcement learning. One area for future investigation is understanding the theoretical properties of advantage condition policies. What are the convergence guarantees? How do the bias variance trade-offs compare to standard approaches? Under what conditions do these methods outperform traditional alternatives? The integration of reward models with advantage computation also raises questions about optimal architectures and training procedures. How should we balance the different objectives when training jointly? What kinds of auxiliary losses or regularization techniques might improve performance? From a practical perspective, these approaches need extensive empirical evaluation across diverse domains. The benefits and drawbacks likely depend heavily on problem characteristics, the nature of the state and action spaces, the quality and quantity of preference data, the reliability of value estimates, and the specific performance requirements. The human factors aspects of preference elicitation also deserve continued investigation. How can we design better interfaces and procedures for collecting high-quality preference data? How do we handle disagreement between evaluators or evolution of preferences over time? Synthesis, principal deviation from convention. As we conclude our deep dive, it's worth reflecting on what makes these approaches interesting from a broader perspective. They represent principal deviations from established practices, not arbitrary changes, but thoughtful engineering decisions based on specific insights about the limitations of conventional approaches. The advantage conditioning approach recognizes that policy learning and value learning have different characteristics, and that explicit coupling might provide benefits over implicit coupling through gradient-based training. The tight integration of reward models and advantage functions acknowledges that preference-based learning might benefit from architectures that directly optimize for the final objectives rather than decomposing the problem into independent stages. These approaches also highlight the importance of understanding the full pipeline of modern RL systems. As we move beyond simple environments and handcrafted reward functions toward complex applications with learned objectives, the interactions between different components become increasingly important. The weirdness of these approaches, their deviation from textbook RL, is actually a feature rather than a bug. It reflects the evolving understanding of how to build practical RL systems that work in real-world applications where the standard assumptions might not hold. Whether these specific techniques become widely adopted remains to be seen, but they represent important explorations of the design space of RL algorithms. They remind us that the field is still young and that there's significant room for innovation in fundamental algorithmic approaches. The questions we started with about advantage conditioning, reward model coupling, and PPO's noise characteristics turn out to be windows into deeper questions about how to build robust, sample-efficient, and practical reinforcement learning systems. Understanding these unconventional approaches helps us better understand both the possibilities and limitations of conventional ones. As practitioners and researchers, we benefit from maintaining both appreciation for established techniques and openness to novel approaches that challenge our assumptions. The field of reinforcement learning continues to evolve, and some of today's unconventional ideas may become tomorrow's standard practices.